It's not the freedom from something, but the freedom to do something that determines the direction. It's not the avoidance of tonality, consonants, meter, and everything else likely to awaken associations with.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Stand By Your Land, a community forum on keeping public lands in public hands, on July 19th at 6:30 p.m. at Keene Garage in Portland. Stand By Your Land will feature detailed presentations from Oregon Wild, the Audubon Society of Portland, the Oregon National Desert Association, and BARC on the many values of public lands, the current proposals to take them away, and how to successfully fight against this attack. Again, that's Stand By Your Land, a community forum on keeping public lands in public hands, on July 19th at 6:30 p.m. at Keene Garage, 505 Northwest 13th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Coming up next is Art Focus. Art Focus interviews painter Pat Boaz about her work in the show New Modernism at Elizabeth Leach Gallery and how artists are looking back at 20th century abstract art to remake it in a new context. Art Focus is made possible by KBOO members and a support from Chamber Music Northwest, featuring the 2017 Summer Festival. 5 weeks of music, over 30 concerts, more than 60 artists and ensembles, 8 world premieres, 2 theatrical experiences, and a celebration of women composers that spans 9 centuries. More information at cmnw.org.
My name's Joseph Gallivan, and you're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is Pat Boaz. She is the director of the School of Art and Design at Portland State University, and she's an artist. She's here to talk about New Modernism, a show running at Elizabeth Leach Gallery from July 20th to September the 2nd. Thanks for coming into KBOO, Pat.
Thanks for inviting me, Joseph. Great to be here.
So you're here to talk about your own work, but you can give a bit of an overview of this show. It's called New Modernism, which is kind of exciting that maybe something new has happened in old art. What do you think they're getting at the Liz Leach Gallery?
Well, I'm really thrilled to be in the show with some artists that I feel an affinity with and really admire. I don't know exactly what they had in mind, but I would say that there's been a continuing revival and interest in abstraction in the last couple of decades after people for a period of time, I think, felt like they had to divorce themselves from what had happened in the last century. You know, we had to be going on to try and figure out something new. And I actually think with the internet and the accessibility we have to all periods, where it's been said that, you know, art has entered an atemporal period where everything is kind of happening at the same time. And I don't know if they had, if Elizabeth Leach and her wonderful crew had that in mind specifically with this show. But it is pulling together people that are working in ways that are not unlike some work that has been done in the past, but maybe there's a different motivation, a different set of undertones or relationships that are being brought together. Certainly, I think there are if there are ways that artists are pulling from similar sources that artists did in the past, there's a difference in the way they're kind of being gone through or kind of ground up to put into new work in relation to what's going on now. Mm-hmm. Our contemporary culture.
So you have 5 paintings in this. They're acrylic, flash, and oil on linen over panel. So a first blush, they look like abstract expressionism. And yet you see you see the sort of shapes of letters, and, you know, they're not just solid figures. There's words or something going on in them. Now, do you feel you were going back to modernism from your other work to do something different?
I actually wasn't thinking about that per se. I've been doing work that's text-based or that has to do with language for a number of years. And it wasn't until about 2012 that I started using letter forms themselves, or the visual language itself, in my work. And that actually came about because I happened to find an article from a 19th century case about a man who, after a head injury, lost the ability to read, but left his other language skills intact. They called it verbal blindness. And I got really interested in this idea that it's such a set of complicated mechanisms in our brain, reading, writing, speaking, all that communication. And it's so finely tuned that there's a physical dimension to it. People who have that kind of alexia, they can write, but they can't read what they've just written unless they trace out the letters. And so it seemed to me that, you know, they could only read through drawing in a certain sense. Yeah. And it was just fascinating to think about the way everything was kind of mashed up together. And we think of it as being just an act of consciousness, you know, reading and writing and communication, but there's such a bodily dimension to it too. Mm-hmm. So I started to get interested in that, and I started to actually allow myself to use letter forms in my work. And some of them initially were just piling up a big barrage of things that, or marks that looked like sometimes recognizable letters. And they actually, when I would begin to play with them as visual forms, later on I realized that they resembled, in some cases, what people have said are the way the alphabet looks to people who have dyslexia. Sometimes letters are disjointed or broken or reversed. Oh, really? And all of
wow.
that.
Wow. Have you seen a drawing of what people see?
Yeah, there are some they have kind of fonts that they've made sometimes that simulate what it looks like to wow. people who have really severe cases of dyslexia. Mm-hmm. So I just found all that really interesting. And, you know, the earlier work that I did about pieces in the show are from 2016, about 2014, 2015, those I think look more, you mentioned abstract expressionism. Those looked more expressionistic to me. I've begun to kind of pare down, and I've been thinking about sometimes the shapes between letters, or, you know, again, kind of things that are coming from that kind of recognizable visual experience that we have of reading, mm-hmm. but playing off of them in a way. So these are much more hard-edged, much more about kind of the spaces in between. And lately, they've also begun to resemble, maybe in some cases, landscapes, or there's a little bit more of a figurative element. So I kind of think about them drawing all of those aspects together. But there certainly is something about the architecture of the page and type and that experience that we have reading ourselves, handwriting ourselves, a really common experience. So, mm-hmm. yeah.
So the postcard image, which people will see, I think it's on the cover of the little First Thursday booklet, maybe. It's the postcard image anyway. It's black triangle, green right angle triangle, a blue almost triangle, a red one. What are these? Are you saying these are the spaces between letters? Is that the main derivation here of these shapes?
In some way, I mean, you could look at that as different hard-edged forms. You could look at that as trying to describe a certain kind of an abstract space. You could also look at it as a big letter W in there, I'm not really interested in people decoding these. Mm-hmm. And you know, I think one of the other artists in the show, Math Bass, talks about the experience of visual language rather than being expected or asked to decode a certain message. I think her work is also like that. There's a certain, again, coming from that architecture of the page or things that we might recognize as symbols, but we're not really sure what they are. It's not meant that we actually get them, that we mm-hmm. actually read them, but that there's some kind of an experience that a viewer has, and they take that wherever they want to take it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not important to me that looks like a W to a viewer, but maybe it recalls that. I am interested in shapes that seem to elicit sound, as because that's what our written letters do. It's interesting to me that you see something that's shaped like a W and that there's an impulse to make something of that sound.
This other one, I mean, they're all entitled, but they have little titles in parentheses. Is that the gallery or is that you?
It's me, because I've gone back and forth with titles. In some senses, I've thought, you know, artists who say that works have no title are not being very generous. They're holding back on something. But after a certain point, you don't want to nail it down, right? Mm-hmm. You want to allow it to be interpreted in a variety of ways. But nonetheless, if you have 10 works that are called untitled, you have to have some way to differentiate. So these little signifiers after this, after the untitled, is a way to do that.
So there's a pink one, and its name is Untitled 2W3. Is that supposed to be recognizable? I mean, the two looks backward, I have to say.
Right. Well, it's like I said, you know, these are things that may recall things that you're used to seeing.
Mm-hmm.
Like you mentioned the London postal code.
Right. It reminded me of SW3.
Right. Yeah. So I'm really happy about that. I don't have, you know, an answer or a particular message in mind, like I said, but putting down shapes, forms, colors, marks, there's an experience that I go through as an artist bringing them all together.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully they elicit a response in a viewer, but it doesn't have to be the one that I put into it.
Or yeah,
it's never going to be that same one, right?
Mm-hmm. But often it's pretty close because you're communicating. So, just tell me a bit about the process when you're doing these abstracts based on letter forms or derived from them. Are you thinking about literature, or are you thinking about semiology, or you know, what's is it an intellectual thing, or are you feeling?
Well, I don't know that there's that much difference for me between those two. I do usually start with some kind of a prompt for myself that not all the time, but mostly that comes from some kind of found text. So it often comes from something that I've read, from short stories or from poetry or from a newspaper article, just some kind of phrase. And I usually am looking for something that has a kind of verbal resonance. There's a sound that I'm looking for. And so I guess the poetry is important mm-hmm. there in that respect. And then I'm looking for a visual resonance that goes along with it. And so I've gone farther away from, you know, thinking about that original text when I'm making work, and then I come back. So it's kind of a back and forth, a dance. I don't, like I said, want to necessarily just convey that text, but it feels like a good anchor for me. Mm-hmm. I really need to have this thing in my mind that I'm beginning with.
So you might be reading a poem and then you're just triggered to go into a painting?
Well, I collect phrases. I collect texts. Mm-hmm. And so I make lists of things. You know, sometimes it's conversation as well, or those words that stick in your head from, you know, whatever experience that you've had.
Mm-hmm.
So it's you know, rather than really trying to convey something from a source, there is that cerebral aspect to it too. But, you know, like I said, there's also a bodily aspect that I'm interested in it too. The poet Susan Howe, when she was writing about Emily Dickinson, who made these beautiful envelope poems where she's just scribbling down a few words on the backs of envelopes, and they've been publishing those as visual but also poetic works lately. Susan Howe, writing about that, talks about letters as being sounds that we see. And so that has a lot to do with what I'm thinking about when I'm painting, although mm-hmm. I'm not really literally tied to mm-hmm. to conveying a particular phrase.
Do you go into the studio with a notebook full of
I have notebooks all over, and I have different texts that I use, and
mm-hmm. But are they right there next to the easel when you're working?
Not right next to the easel, but someplace mm-hmm. around.
Yeah.
Right?
But at that point, you're working from your memory. Mm-hmm. The images are coming straight out of your brain. You're not copying. So.
No, I have done, you know, drawings of letters, and sometimes I put them up together in different ways and look and draw the abstract shapes from in between the letters, mm-hmm. you know, the counterforms that you might call them in typography. So there are these other kinds of vocabularies that I collect, and so there's drawing and other things that are around when I'm working.
Mm-hmm. My name's Joseph Gallivan. You're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is Pat Boas. She is the director of the School of Art and Design at PSU, and she's talking about New Modernism, a show at Liz Leach. Pat, there's another artist in here called Math Bass, who does... She has three pieces. They're very striking, very kind of graphic designy, you know, it's mm-hmm. very bold, strong black, white, and red images. They look like houses, keyholes. They have a sort of quote marks in them. Do you know if there's a similar impulse behind her work as there is yours?
From what I greatly admire her work. She's an LA-based artist, she makes really interesting paintings, sculptural objects. She also works in performance and in sound. From what I know of her work, she uses a lot of everyday objects that become, because of this flat graphic treatment, they become kind of symbols and look like there's another visual language that's being created. Also, she's somebody that I think takes from the architecture of the page. These prints are part of a new edition. From what I understand, they're called News with a Z at the end and a exclamation mark. And I think that there's elements that come from, you know, what we see, what we think is new. The quotation marks kind of remind me of ads, a lot of times things can be read more than one way. The way the quote marks are in this one painting, they look almost like eyes. This becomes kind of a face. At the same time, it's like you mentioned, architecture. There's a doorway. So it's an interesting conglomeration of things that seem very spare and simple, but the more you look, the more complex.
Mm-hmm.
So I saw them at the gallery this morning. They're really beautiful prints.
They're archival pigment print on Epson Ultra Smooth. Is Ultra Smooth some kind of paper?
Well, that's it's a digital paper.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
So you think that giving them that kind of flat graphic design-y treatment invites people to think of them as sort of posters or, you know, that kind of communication?
That could be certainly that's a natural association to make with these prints, but her painting is also like that too. She often works in gouache, which is a very flat, very opaque paint. It used to be called designer's gouache, and it's what designers used before computers to get really flat color.
Oh, yeah?
And it's a beautiful paint. I use it a lot myself, and I really
with a
like
brush?
That. Yeah.
Oh, okay. What is flash? FLASHE.
Flash is a kind of like a vinyl. It's a water-based paint, but it's kind of a vinyl on it. So that's also very matte. And I think when I'm using that, and some other artists have been using that, there's an effort to just get a lot of variety in surfaces between something that has a sheen, something that maybe is really glossy, mm-hmm. something that's really flat. So you'll never see that on the web or in any kind of printed matter, but when you see the work itself, you'll see that there's mm-hmm. there's a differentiation of the surface that is important.
And flash is a bit more matte than mm-hmm. other types.
Right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I was wondering, you know, how do artists react to the web taking all their stuff and doing it better in many ways, you know, graphics.
Mm-hmm.
You're saying working on texture is one way they can be different, put more richness into their medium.
Yeah, the things that you can't see on the web that you can see in person. Mm-hmm. Is that what you mean?
Yeah.
On the one hand, we have access to so much more. You know, we can see exactly what's being hung in most of the gallery shows that are in New York City today, if we want to. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really wonderful. It's democratized to a certain extent for people who have access to technology, information and what's out there. And so there's a great spread of culture in that way. But on the other hand, sometimes it's really deceptive. Paintings can look better than they really do, or they can also look not as good as they mm-hmm. really do. And, you know, what you mentioned is one aspect. It's you can't really see what that surface is like. And mm-hmm. there is, you know, a material, kind of a visceral sense to that for me when I'm looking at work mm-hmm. itself, right?
In the show, there's one piece by Samuel Levi Jones, and I saw it. It wasn't hung yet, or it wasn't framed, mm-hmm. but it was lots of green rectangles sort of uh-huh. stitched together from pale green to dark green, and they're book covers, I think, but thin. Yeah, and they're going to be hung like a big abstract painting.
Yeah. I think that piece in particular are prints that are made from book covers. A lot of his works are from actually covers of old books.
Mm-hmm.
He does some pieces that are the covers of a set of encyclopedias from, you know, various different years.
Mm-hmm.
And he's also done some pieces that are collections of law books. So this was one of the things when we were speaking earlier, some of the imagery that Math Bass uses and my work coming from letter forms and then Samuel Levy Jones working from book covers, it feels like there's a little bit of a subtext here. Chris Johansson, another of the artists in the show, also uses language in his work as mm-hmm. little thought bubbles or conversations. So it's maybe subconscious or maybe something that's just circumstantial. But with his work, the absence is all of those texts that these book covers have contained. There's no information right on mm-hmm. in this work itself. This piece is kind of a layering of really kind of beautiful transparent greens and some mm-hmm. ochres maybe.
Is this a print? Did you say?
Yeah, I saw it this morning, and I believe it's a print. So he would have I suspect, inked up the book covers themselves and maybe run them through a press onto the paper, and maybe a couple of times. So I'm not exactly sure that that's the way that they were made, but that's what it looks like to me. But I do know that in other instances, it's the book covers themselves that do get stitched together. Mm-hmm. Sometimes he mixes and matches, so there's different shapes and colors, but this one is pretty consistent because it's all of a particular set.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Is there a lot of death of the book art out there?
I'm sorry, a death?
Is death of the book?
I think the book...
Nostalgic kind of goodbye to...
Yeah, I think the book is just fine. I don't think... I know that there was a fear of that for a long time, but I think we've come through. Okay, there's I guess bookstores are probably having a hard time these days, but there are certainly people who are really carrying on the torch quite well.
There's another artist in the show, Amanda Wojcik, and she has a piece called Cutout, which is three panels, wooden panels with shapes cut out of them, a rectangle, what do you call that? Parallelogram? No.
Something like that.
One parallelogram and one trapezium, I think. Is this more of that kind of shapes left, you know, by between letters, do you think?
I'm not sure that she works specifically that way, but you know, you can start to, once you're on a roll, you can start to read things in a particular way. But I from what I understand and what I know of Amanda's work, she's working with common everyday materials quite a lot, and you're having trouble describing the shape of her work. Well, a lot of her work is definitely made to be wonky in shape, so they're not you know, right angles. Things are a little bit off or hanging down, and there's a kind of really lovely ease and humor, I think, in her work and in her forms, and an immediacy. I think she's working from, you know, the kind of the culture of the home, you know, what we have around us, how things are being put together, how there's a lot of repetition and routine in her work.
Yeah. Right. The other work in the other room, the smaller room at the back of the show, is John Baldessari. It's called Madame Cézanne's Hairdos. So it's pretty simple. I mean, it's different hairdos. They look like Beatles. Sort of pop art, you know, right. Sergeant Pepper. That's just, I guess, part, you know, there is whimsy in that show. There's a bit of whimsy in this, do you think? Do you think that's what we need now to be able to handle modernism, you know, the old 20th century modernism? Can we handle the seriousness of it anymore?
I don't know. I guess we need a little relief these days with our current societal situation and what's going on politically. I think having a sense of ease and relief doesn't hurt.
I was just at the Broad Collection in Los Angeles, where a lot of it is kind of whimsical postmodern art. You know, Jeff Koons and. The big table and chairs are kind of, it's fun in there. It's like a really nice, fun hour and a half. The mirror room, the infinity mirror room. Mm-hmm. I wonder if maybe we've got used to fun postmodernism and then going back to kind of, you know, old mid-20th century high modernism is a bit too difficult for us.
Well, what I'm thinking about more is early 20th century, and when there was, you know, a really earnest attempt to try and create a visual language that people could that people could respond to directly and genuinely, and so I think I would see that at play here a little bit more than just just having good fun. I mean, with postmodernism, there was a lot about consumer culture and the deaths of a lot of other things. I think that we're, this seems to be more optimistic and more hopeful that we're looking to build again, I guess, mm-hmm. I would say. And so rather than think about, all the things that are off limits, mining history again is something that makes sense to see where we can look to go ahead, because we certainly do seem to be repeating some of the darker parts of history all too often.
My name's Joseph Gallivan. You've been listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week was Pat Boas. She's the director of the School of Art and Design at Portland State University and also has work in the show New Modernism, which runs at Elizabeth Leach Gallery from July 20th to September the 2nd. And Pat has recently received the Hallie Ford Visual Arts Fellowship, which is an award which is still going, open to Oregon artists, and it brings in enough of a prize that she can take a year off to work. So thanks for coming into KBOO, Pat.
Thank you, Joseph. It was a pleasure to talk to you.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the